Today's episode is brought to you by Harrys.com. Use promo code LOC at checkout to save $5 off your first purchase.
Congratulations, boy.
Many gave their lives that we might stand here once again, united in the government of a lawful republic.
Gaius Octavian was henceforth to be regarded, for all intents and purposes, as my lawful son.
Gaius Octavian Caesar.
I'm ready.
Welcome, everybody. Episode 23 of The Life of Augustus Caesar.
Welcome.
They're back.
Even Rob, welcome.
You're really stretching out the hate against Rob, man.
Well, for him, it's been 3 weeks or whatever. For me, it's been 2.5 hours of pain, but that's fine. We don't have to go into it.
Well, at the end of episode 22, we talked about all of the shit that's going down between Octavian and Sexy P. Menas slash Menodorus, the freed slave of Sexies, had defected to Octavian. There were more shipments of grain being attacked by pirates, and Octavian was blaming it on Sextus. Sextus was saying, no, it wasn't me. Anyway, Octavian has finally decided he's going to invade Sicily.
Yeah. So it finally looks like the battle is going to come. But again, as we've said, I don't know how many times since we started the Caesar show, the Romans just don't get fighting on the high seas. You put them on land, you let them line up in their turtle or whatever, they can kick your ass all day long, but they don't get the seas. They don't get the strategy or however the best way to fight. But my favorite thing is they don't take in the power of the seas into consideration. They just think if you throw a lot of numbers at it, you're just going to kick ass and take name and you're going to win. There's no finesse. It's just like a broadsword. But that is going to change slowly over time, because one of these Romans is going to start to figure out the finer points of seamanship, and it's really going to pay off in the end. But for now, they're just brutes on the water trying to replicate what they do on land, and that's just not a good tactic.
It is not a good tactic. But the real reason that Octavian wanted to go to Sicily was that he just wanted to go.
Oh.
Sicily. I want to visit my great Uncle Joe. His Rhinoceros I really miss. He sings a song just like this.
Sicily, surrounded by sea.
An island of Italy. Lovely fields with mountains above. People with hearts so full of love.
See, that's right. They just wanted to go to Sicily, man.
Okay. Well, I've judged him wrong, and I apologize.
That was a little Australian band known as The Wiggles. Ladies and gentlemen, The Wiggles.
I was learning a lot. I should have figured that out.
You know The Wiggles, right?
Yeah.
Huge over there.
Yes.
Huge.
Yes. Multimillionaires. And I'm sad to say, I mean, I don't know what's worse, that we fund most of the drugs from South America and Central America, or we fund The Wiggles. Either way, it's embarrassing.
The Wiggles recently, they reformed, because it's mostly new members now, but they reformed the original cast recently, the original group, to do an adults-only concert. It was sold out, packed down the street. Like, grown-ups went to see The Wiggles.
Were they all wearing the different color shirts?
Yeah.
Of their favorite?
Yeah, they were. Octavian was having trouble, though, putting together a fleet to attack Sexy, because if you think about it, normally your ship building yards are on the coast so you can get the boat into the water. And if you're going to train your fleet, you're going to do it in the water.
Yeah.
But Sexy already had a fleet. So anywhere that Octavian was trying to set up a shipbuilding yard or train people, Sexy P could just send his fleet there and fuck them up.
Smash, burn, and leave.
Yeah. Anywhere within, you know, reach of the Bay of Naples and Sicily, where his main base of his fleet was, He could just sail halfway up the coast of Italy and just fuck up anything you're doing. Reminds me of playing Age of Empires. If those of you that are old enough to remember playing Age of Empires, you know, when your enemies were trying to build shipyards to build their fleet, you would have to go in and destroy their shipyard before it was built. So this is the power, and as Great Britain learned in the 18th and 19th centuries, the power of having a powerful fleet is you can stop everyone else from having a powerful fleet. Yeah. Because you can go and fuck up their fleet before they can build one as big as yours. And then the Wright brothers came along and fucked all that up. Damn, Wright brothers.
And the reason Sextus Men can do that is because, as far as everybody in play, he's got the only men who actually know how to sail a ship, how to control if, you know, what happens when a storm comes along. He's got the only experienced sailors on there, which is another one of the many reasons why Caesar's been getting his ass kicked thusly so far.
Well, remember that part of the deal of the Treaty of Brundusium was that Sexy P got official command of Rome's entire navy.
Ah, right.
So he's got it all. He's got all the men. He's got all the boats. So that was a bit of an oversight when they did that.
Yeah.
So Octavian really can't build a fleet anywhere near close to Sicily. So he has to get them built in far remote parts of the empire. His idea is to have two fleets built elsewhere and then to meet up in the sea close to Sicily to go and attack Sexy P. But
yeah, because that's going to work.
It sounded like a good plan on paper, but it doesn't really come together. As you said, his ships were new, his crews were inexperienced, his commanders were inexperienced, except Minas, the guy that had come over from Sexy P.
Right, right.
Sexy P's guys were all experienced. In fact, when he was hiring them, he only had one question for them.
But first, are you experienced? Or have you ever been experienced? Well, I am. Well, I know. You probably scream and cry that your little world won't let you go. But who in your measly little world are you trying to prove that you're made out of gold and can't be sold? So, are you experienced? Have you ever been experienced? Well, I have.
Get out of my head. Get out of my head. Oh, never mind. Okay, stop that. Stop.
Jimmy.
All the experience was on one side.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, even if they had like, I remember, and I'm afraid to bring this up because you get really excited because you scared me the last time I brought this up. But even if they had CBs like on Convoy, if the two halves of Caesar's fleet could have discussed and planned it better, because the idea was to coordinate to attack so they couldn't defend one side or the other side properly. They'd hit both sides evenly and take the island. That all got screwed up. There was no coordination, which allowed Sextus to focus on one side and then focus on the other fleet. And he did it brilliantly.
Yeah. So it turns out that sailing your fleets down to try and tackle Kokomo? Octavian was...
Oh, it's a trap!
By the way...
died this week.
Yeah, we should pay our respects to Eric Bowersfeld, the voice of Admiral Akbar, dead at 93 this week.
Wow.
And we've certainly had fun with that clip.
Yeah.
Imagine how many times in the last 30-odd years he's been asked to pull that out at parties.
Could you say it, sir? That'd be great. Thank you.
You look good. Yeah.
Sexy's fleets easily crush Octavian's fleets. Octavian's fleets don't get to even join up. He goes and picks them off one at a time. And the
then
bad
it gets worse.
Yeah, the bad weather sort of finishes the rest.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, just to give an idea. So you got me doing it now. Sexy Pete's squadrons, they meet one half of Caesar's fleet and they pretty much rough them up. I mean, they win. It's nothing major, but they win. Then they get to the second half of his fleet, pretty much beat the crap out of them. But the few that do survive get hit by a storm. So by the time it's all over with, Caesar's got like what, less than half of the ships he started out with immediately. So part of it was his fault, part of it was Mother Nature. But again, his men have no idea what they're doing on the ships. You just hoist the sails, the wind comes in, and then something happens. But it's a humiliating defeat for Caesar, and the people of Rome are just going to be pissed as crap again at him.
The only one of his admirals who knew what was going on was Minas, the old slave who'd right. come over from Sexy Pete. Dio writes, for Minas being Minas, because he was mean, Minas being an old hand on the sea, foresaw the storm and immediately shifted his ships to the open sea and moored them there, placing them at intervals with their anchor lines slack so that the lines should not be stretched and break, and kept rowing directly against the wind. In this way, no rope was strained and he remained constantly in the same position, recovering by the use of the oars all the ground he lost by the force of the wind.
Oh, see, I wouldn't even know to do that. That's cool. That makes sense.
Yeah. See, there you go. Now you know, folks, what to do if you're in a rowboat in the middle of a massive storm. Thanks to this show. We're teaching you the shit that you need to know.
Right.
Survival skills.
Exactly. There's a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
We got you covered.
Got you covered. The rest of the ships were dashed to pieces on the shore. By the next day, Octavian was left with less than half of his fleet.
Ouch.
Sexy was pretty happy, though. He was seen around town saying,
"We came, we saw, we kicked its ass."
And... But the Romans, the people of Rome, weren't too happy. Obviously, this meant more food shortages.
Damn.
There were riots in Rome. They were like, what did you go and do that for? You could have just left shit as it was. Okay, we weren't getting every grain shipment. Now we're getting no grain shipments again. Yeah. The peace deal is completely over. One of Octavian's, childhood friends who was very close to him, Maecenas, who I'll talk a bit about in a second, he was sent to calm the situation with the riots, but not a lot he could do. They were like,
unless he's bringing food.
Yeah, or a massive army. They were like, fuck you, Maecenas.
This now, is for you. This is for the horse you rode in on.
I think we may have mentioned Maecenas in passing before, but a bit like Agrippa, we haven't spent a lot of time on him. I just wanted to take a few minutes to talk about Maecenas.
Yes, please.
Because he's a very important figure in history. A boyhood friend of Octavian's, he first appears when employed by Octavian in arranging his marriage with Scribonia. He was the guy that was sent to sort of ask Sexy P the permission for Octavian to marry Scribonia, or to her father, I think, maybe. Anyway, he also assisted in negotiating the Treaty of Brundisium and the reconciliation with Mark Antony at that time. He seems to have taken some part in the campaigns of Mutina Philippi and Perusia, the Perusine War. We don't have a lot of information on him there, though, but he was of ancient Etruscan lineage.
Ooh, nice.
Claimed descent from the royal Etruscan house of the Cilnii. Well, when the Cilnii clan were kicked out of their Etruscan hometown of Arretium in the 4th century BCE due to jealousy over their wealth and influence, they were taken in by the Romans and made equestrians. And he sort of obviously rises with Octavian over the years, becomes even more wealthy, and he becomes so wealthy that he is best remembered in history as a major patron of the arts, especially Horace and Virgil. He sponsored their careers, the great poets of antiquity. Major works from both of them are dedicated to him. And he became so famous for his patronage that a word, Maecenate, was coined, which was basically for the last 2,000 years was synonym for patronage, the Meissen.
Oh, wow.
So his very name came to mean patronage of the arts. So impressive. All of our patrons, you are our Meissenate.
And we appreciate it.
We do. And we don't sound like we do often because we, you know, we call you names, particularly behind your back when you're not listening. But
we don't want them to get too cocky. That's
no,
what
I don't get too comfortable.
Don't, that too. Yeah. No, my thing is, whatever
treat
them
mean, keep them keen. That's my philosophy for our sponsors, patrons, supporters.
Whenever I think of him, Meissenate, I always think of him almost like Octavian's Machiavelli. You know, Agrippa's like the muscle and the whatever, but I always think of this guy as the political guy who's, you know, he sits there and he's shrewd and he tries to figure things out. I mean, I know I'm oversimplifying it, but that's how I always thought of him. But yeah, just one of those guys growing up with him. And we have to remember, these are really young people who are in positions of power. They have absolutely no right to be in, and it would never happen in Rome because you had to be 30 to at least be in the Senate. So again, this is just taking the entire Roman world and turning it upside down.
Yeah, these guys are still in their early to mid-20s and
that's crazy.
They're fighting massive battles on land and on sea. They're negotiating deals and treaties. It's, yeah,
damn.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
yeah, I think it's a good, you know, explanation of these two guys. Agrippa's the guy you send when you need to get shit done.
Right.
When you need engineering or organization or military activities, you send Agrippa. When you need deals negotiated, and you know, political
finesse.
Yeah, you send Maecenas.
Nice.
But in this case, quelling the food riots wasn't much he could do.
No, I have a banana. No, yeah.
Sexy, on the other hand, he's fucking
loving it.
I'm loving it.
Oh my God, I am so awesome.
In fact, this is about the time when he starts wearing a sea blue colored cloak. And referring to himself as the son of Neptune.
First, I was the son of the Great One, and now I've been promoted, and now I'm the son of a god.
Yeah.
What's next to me? Yeah.
I mean,
everybody's the son of a god.
Yeah. The son of Neptune.
What are we doing wrong? Go ahead.
You know, Neptune, god of the sea, fishy smelling. Right. I'm not sure that. That's the god I'd want to be associated with.
I wouldn't choose that one, but it's
were all the rest of the gods taken?
They weren't there at the time.
Yeah.
Who knows? Do what you can.
For people that are big fans of the old Monkey TV series, he was Sandy. Sandy was the god of the sea god in that.
Is that the Little Mermaid's father? Or am I thinking of, no, that's somebody else.
Never seen The Little Mermaid. I'll have to decline.
What? Stop that. This right now. Get some box of tissues. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay. Octavian says when he hears this that he will have ultimate victory in spite of Neptune and ban statues of Neptune from being carried in the procession at the next games in Rome.
Petty. A bit petty. Well, if you're the son of a god, I guess that gives you some right to bitch slap another god because you're in the same neighborhood. But yeah, don't carry those statues. I don't want to see that. And I'm still going to win this despite the fact that he's got a god on his side.
I would have, you know, I preferred to see him leave the statue and just get up and take a piss on it.
Yes. Or just go piss in the water, whatever. But that
pull
that's
his little imperator out and just, yeah, piss on it. Anyway, most of the Romans blame Octavian for the extreme food shortage that has come back and for fighting what they see as an unnecessary and disastrous
war. It is unnecessary. From what I know, it is unnecessary, but I wasn't there. I don't know.
Yeah, but not, you know, Octavian's thinking of Octavian.
Yeah, that's true. He's not thinking about the people.
And, you know, without wanting to get too much of down a rabbit hole and without wanting to promote the Cold War too much at coldwar.com, it's, you know, these are the people in wealth and power are always thinking about their own interests when they start wars. They're not really thinking about the little people. They're not thinking about, you know, how do we provide better infrastructure, better healthcare, better education, more safety, stability, better opportunities for the little people. they're thinking about, how do I make a buck out of this? How do I make more money for my family or my friends and their families? How do I make my name go down in the history books? That's really right. What's their motivation tends to be, more often than not, I suspect.
Well, let me just ask this, and again, we don't have to go down, whatever, but okay, so let's say I play the lottery and I win $1 million or $2 million or whatever, not, you know, whatever. I don't have to work for the rest of my life. My family doesn't have to work. My kids are going to be going to a nice college and they're going to have nice retirement, whatever. We're set. We are generationally, unless someone does something stupid, we're set. But for someone, I guess, like him, who was pretty much hanging out with the god of the Roman world, maybe his sights are set higher because he's already started out halfway, you know, to the top. Does that make sense? I mean,
who are you talking about?
I'm sorry. I apologize. Octavian. So maybe what he's got now is not enough compared to what could be, compared to what his adopted father.
No,
had.
I don't think it's that. As we said in the last episode, I think he knows that the deal, the peace deal that they did at Brundusium is a temporary thing. You know, it's kind of like, it's like Churchill, Stalin, and Roosevelt, man, in 1941. You know, the Grand Alliance, it's a temporary state of affairs. Or it's Stalin's deal with Hitler. Or the neutrality pact that Stalin had with Japan. It's like, look, we're not really ready to fight you right now. So we've got other fights that we're fighting, other battles we're fighting. So let's just agree that we're not going to fight each other for a little while until we're all ready to fight each other. All right. Yeah. Okay.
Another example. I, for example, would like to meet Rob face to face and say, no hard feelings. I thought it was very funny. You did a very good job. And then do something to him. But the point is,
you've got to go buy a baseball bat and wrap it in barbed wire first. So until you've had time to do that.
I'm looking at one right now. I've already got that.
Oh, okay.
Now you made me ruin the surprise for Rob.
Do you call it Lucille? It's a shout-out.
I call it the Rob Killer. The Walking Dead.
Walking Dead fans.
So it's a matter of convenience for now because who was it? This was months ago when we had someone on about the power. I can't remember. Something about power games or games, computer game or whatever. But he was literally saying just the fact that someone you have an agreement with may eventually turn on you. You have to prepare to destroy them or even just go ahead and plan to destroy them, knowing that one day, maybe, even if it's a small chance, they might attack you. So you have to go ahead and launch your attack. I mean, it's that kind of thinking, which is why these guys are in the history books, because they're the last ones standing.
Yep. And, you know, it's why the US, you know, continued building atom bombs after Germany had been defeated.
Yeah.
The atom bomb was supposed to be built to defeat Nazi Germany. Germany was defeated and they kept building atom bombs, man. And they didn't just build one or two.
Nope.
They built thousands of them just in case. But,
never know.
Yeah. And, you know, we got to keep in mind here that these guys, Octavian, Sextus, Antony, and Lepidus, at this stage, all hated each other, didn't trust each other, didn't believe that the others were going to keep up their end of the bargain. And I think from Octavian's perspective, he knew that there was going to be a showdown at some point between him and Antony. And he needed as much money and as much military might as possible before that happened. And so one way to increase all of his personal power was to take what Sextus currently had control of, the fleet and the revenues from those grain, islands and Peloponnese and the grain. So it's all a big chess. It's a big chess game, man.
Right. And if anybody's in the middle, it is literally Octavian. I mean, because Antony and Sextus could join up and attack him from both directions. So if anybody's in the worst situation geographically, it is Octavian.
Antony and Lepidus relatively close. Antony and Sextus are relatively close. We already know that there were rumors earlier on back at the Battle of Philippi that Lepidus was talking to Sextus. That's why Lepidus got sent to Africa in the first place.
There has been talk.
So, as you say, Octavian is in the weakest position of all three, possibly. I mean, Sextus
in some ways.
Yeah. So anyway, he's getting blamed for it. Now, Octavian, before he had gone and tried to give battle with Sextus,
And that was in 38, by the way, 38 BC.
38. He had sent a message to Antony to come from wherever he was now, probably in Syria, getting ready for the Parthian campaign.
Right.
To come to Brundisium for a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And then Antony turns up, but
that's nice.
Octavian doesn't come to the meeting.
What? That's tacky.
So there are several theories on why he doesn't show.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is that he was too busy banging Livia's hot snatch.
Yeah, I'd have to go with that one.
You know what it's like, man, when you've got a good thing. It's new.
You're excited.
Do I tap this or do I go and fucking meet with Antony again? Ships. Oh, my God.
Fuck the ships. Yeah.
Antony gives up and sails back to the east without having the meeting. He sailed all the way.
He's got to be pissed.
From Syria, gets to Italy. Octavian doesn't show. And so he says, but there might be more to it. Appian writes, Antony came at the appointed day with a small escort, but not finding Octavian there, he did not wait, either because he did not approve of the war, considering it a violation of the treaty, or because he observed Octavian's great preparations for the desire to be the sole ruler did not permit their fears to slumber at any time, or because he was alarmed by a prodigy.
This is my favorite.
Oh, you want to read it then?
No, go ahead. This is one I vote for.
It was found that one of the guards who slept around his tent had been devoured by wild beasts, except his face only.
Yeah.
As though this had been left for the purpose of recognition.
Yeah.
And that he had uttered no cry, nor did any of the men who were asleep with him know of it. The Brundusians said that a wolf had been seen just before daybreak running away from the tents.
Right.
Nevertheless, Antony wrote to Octavian not to violate the treaty with Sextus, and he threatened Menodorus with punishment as his own fugitive slave, for he had been the slave of Pompey the Great, whose property Antony had bought when it was sold under the law of war.
Ah, right. So let's break this down. Either Antony comes and he doesn't wait because he's really not into this. He doesn't want them to fight because he needs things nice and calm so he can focus on his thing. He doesn't think the treaty should be violated by Octavian when technically it's already been violated by Octavian, or because a wolf ate part of one of his guards up except for his face, so he gets the hell out of there. Is that what we're supposed to believe?
Or he sees that Octavian seems to be making preparations to become sole ruler.
Everybody. I'm going to kick everybody's ass.
I'm going to go and I'm going to come back with a fucking army, is what he's thinking.
Yeah,
so we don't really know. And the suggestion also is that Octavian didn't turn up because at that stage he already had his fleet. And he was like, you know what? I don't need Antony's permission. I don't need his support. I'm just going to go and do it. I'm the man. Yep. I've got it all sorted.
I'm the man.
You know, I'm the son of a god.
I'm a god.
You're a god.
I'm a god. I'm not the god. I don't think.
Something like that. He was. He was ready to go.
Yeah.
But it just goes to show that there's still a lot of friction between these guys, possibly even more friction now because he didn't turn up. Yeah.
Cam, if I may, for a second, be slightly immature, and I apologize, I'll never do this again. If I was Marcus Antonius and he stood me up, I would go back to my home where my wife / his sister is at, and I would do things to her. Ooh. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Payback.
Payback, bitches. So, Octavian also, apparently, there's a rumor, he had heard that Antony had sent an emissary to Lepidus about forming an alliance against Octavian.
You can't trust anybody.
Where was Lepidus?
Yeah, North Africa. Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah, baby. We haven't played this in a long time. But we gotta do it. Settle in, folks.
Hear the drums echo in tonight. And she hears only whispers of some quiet conversation. She's coming in 12:30 flight. The moonlit wings reflect the stars that guide me towards salvation. I stopped an old man along the way, hoping to find some old forgotten words or ancient melodies. He turned to me as if to say, hurry boy, it's waiting there for you.
Don't know if you knew that, but I fucking love that song.
He does. He
don't
really
know if
really
I've ever mentioned it.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, he sends to Lepidus saying, hey, 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 let's gang up on Octavian.
Oh, my goodness.
But after Octavian's naval disaster.
Yeah. Come back.
He sends Maecenas to Antony to say, come on. Yeah, come back.
Sorry. I was just joking.
Yeah, I was only kidding. Come back.
April Fool's.
And Antony comes back. This time they meet at Tarentum, which is modern Taranto in the heel of Italy, in 37.
Mm-hmm.
This time, however, Antony comes with 300 warships.
He ain't playing. Fuck
which
the fuck.
Is the entire size of Sexy P's fleet, by the way.
Right.
So Antony does have the fleet already to stop Sexy if he wants.
And he's going to need a fleet because he's going into Parthia?
Yes, because, you know, all of those...
Look at desert.
All of those oceans in the middle of Persia.
Yeah, but he's right not to give it up because it's things like that that are keeping him alive from friend and foe.
Well, he does need to cross the Hellespont.
That's true. That's true.
You know. And he needs to get his troops from Italy over to Greece and stuff like that. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, but he opens up his heart. And this, and I wouldn't have done this, but out of the 300 ships, he loans 120 of them, no small number, to Caesar for his upcoming. So I guess he's almost done 180. He's gone from don't break the treaty to here's almost the means you need to destroy the person who you have a treaty with.
But apparently Octavia is the one that negotiates all of this.
Right.
She reached out to Agrippa, got him on board, and she kind of is the peace dealer between Octavian, her brother, and Antony, her husband, to get them to come together and to try and, you know, dispel the mistrust between the two of them. She's like, look, he wasn't trying to do a deal with Lepidus. Trust me, I would know if he was. I'm fucking him. He tells me everything when he comes.
Everything.
Yeah.
Pillow talk. Come together. Sorry.
He's got, you know, he can't hold anything back. Well, no,
in fact, he doesn't. I'm not bragging. I'm just saying.
Yeah. When I'm snowballing him, you know, he tells me everything. So she says that the emissary to Lepidus actually was to arrange a marriage between Antony's daughter and Lepidus's son.
Yeah.
Even though Antony's daughter's like a year old at this stage to Fulvia before she died.
Right.
But yeah, he loans Octavian 120 ships, and Octavian in return promises to send him 20,000 infantry to be recruited from northern Italy for the Parthian War.
That's pretty. I would give up the ships too. If he can give me the means to take care of the Parthians, yeah, you got yourself a deal.
Now, Antony's fleet that he hands over is commanded by Titus Statilius Taurus.
What a name.
Taurus the Bull, man. Oh. Now, remember that name, because again, he is a motherfucking player.
Right.
Taurus was a novus homo, a new man or self-made consul, mm-hmm. goes on to become a two-time consul.
Nice.
Then again, becoming a consul in this era doesn't take
much. Not a big deal. No. Not a big deal.
All you got to do to be consul is write your name up on the board. And yeah, you're a consul. You're a consul.
I was a consul for Tuesday. Woo! Yeah.
But no, he does become a bit of a player, this guy. the big news. Oh, sorry. Octavian also gives Antony 1,000 elite Praetorian Guard.
Which is a big deal. These guys are the elite. They are highly trained.
The big news at this meeting of the minds, though, is that their original 5-year term of the original triumvirate has expired.
I know what you're going to say. And they returned the Republic back to the Senate. Woo!
Yeah. Sure they did.
So it's time to renew. So I guess they just took their original 5-year contract, erased the date.
Yeah.
Pushed it out 5 more years or whatever and signed it again.
They liquid papered out the date, photocopied it, and just wrote in the new date. Yeah, they renew it for another 5 years. So remember the original deal in 43 BCE was, look, we need 5 years of, you know, the shared dictatorship in order to crush the assassins of Caesar and their armies.
And set everything back to rights.
Yes.
Just like it's going to be okay. Just give us 5 years.
To restore the Republic. And now they're like, the what?
Well,
what? The Res Publica who?
The Publa. I think you mean the Triumvirate. I think is that what you're trying to say? Yeah. Well, we've got the Parthians over here. We got Sextus over here. We've got these potential enemies. We need more time. I understand you're upset, but we need more time. Give us 5 more years. And we'll get this shit straight. I promise.
Mm.
Yeah. Nobody gives up power. Nobody ever gives up power.
Except. Oh, and
okay.
Sulla.
Except for Sulla. Yeah.
Yeah.
He got what he wanted. He went out on his terms and he partied until he died. So not a bad way to go. I thought you were going to mention earlier when you were mentioning Livia's first husband that when he was, what was he in 42?
Praetor.
I tried to find out some more information, but he literally did not want to give up the position. Like, nope, I'm good at being a praetor. I like being a praetor. I like to have a praetor name, you know, after my name. I think I'm just going to keep my office. And, you know, you can't do that. But so this guy, whatever was going on in his head, he wasn't quite all there.
Yeah.
But these guys had the ability to keep their power.
And then the Perusian War happened and he lost and he became proscribed, I think is kind of what happened.
Yeah.
So anyway, Triumvirate is renewed for another 5 years. Antony's 10-year-old son by Fulvia, Antyllus, is betrothed to Octavian's infant daughter, Julia.
Aw, that's not sick.
Now, up until this time, there's no mention of Agrippa having married. And as I said, I think in the last episode, despite what you might have seen in HBO's Rome, there's no evidence I'm aware of that he was in love with Octavia, although it's probably a reasonable guess. They would have known each other growing up together, you know, and as I said, I think in an earlier episode, until Julius Caesar was assassinated, she and Octavian were both fucking nobodies. So, you know, quite likely that she and Agrippa, who was also a nobody, always equestrian, but, you know, could have married out of love or lust. But as soon as, you know, Octavian becomes the new Julius Caesar, he knows that's probably not going to happen. Maybe he hasn't married before now because he's got a broken heart and he's still hoping that he's going to be able to get her hand in marriage. But then she gets married off to Antony. And he's like, all right, well, fuck it. Yeah, might as well get married. And he marries Cecilia Attica.
Oh, okay.
The daughter of Cicero's closest friend and correspondent, mentioned many times in our old series.
Yes.
Pomponius Atticus.
Yes, nice. Okay. So
now, she was married up. She was only 14.
God.
Many... Many men had tried to secure her hand in marriage from a very young age, but her father had waited until she was 14 and considered of marriageable age before he would betroth her to anyone.
Good for him.
Apparently, the marriage to Agrippa may have been arranged by Antony, perhaps as early as 42 BCE. Now, Agrippa could have married a girl from a patrician family. You know, he was Octavian's right-hand man. He could have had whatever wife he wanted, but he chose to marry one from the equestrian class, maybe because of modesty or...
Good for him.
Maybe he just was a big fan of Atticus. You know, it speaks fairly highly of Agrippa's character that...
Right.
Atticus agreed to marry his daughter to him because we know Atticus was a fairly solid, stout guy.
Intellectual, right.
Yeah, friends with Cicero, fairly smart dude. Although I seem to recall he chose Caesar's side on the Civil War, whereas...
Right.
Or did he stay neutral? No, I think he went with Caesar.
He wrote something like, well, if it's going to come down to war and there's nothing you can do about it, pick the side that's... probably going to win, who's got the experience and the weapons. He said something, I'm paraphrasing.
Something
but he said,
like
yeah,
that.
If it's going to come down to it, yeah, you got to go with Caesar. How can he not win? He's been fighting for the last 10 years.
Yeah. Whereas Cicero obviously went with Pompey.
Yeah. No, this is wrong. Yeah.
Ave listeners, and welcome to the story of me, the Life of Augustus podcast. Did you know that when I was 24 years old, I shaved my beard for the first time? And did you know that I used a razor from Harry's.com? Why did I get a razor from Harry's? Their German-engineered 5-blade cartridges are of the highest quality. Free shipping throughout the US of A. Since Harry's cuts out the middleman, their factory direct prices will save you half off the leading brands. Money back guarantee if you're not satisfied. They're amazing starter kits, and make sure you check out the Truman one, which comes with a razor handle, 3 of Harry's 5-blade German-engineered razors, and moisturizing shave cream are only $15. But if you use the promo code LOC at checkout for your first purchase, you get $5 off that. That's a Magnus deal. Make sure you check out their new Truman razor with its rubberized non-slip grip for extra control. Anyway, pull your chariot over right now. Go to harrys.com, that's H-A-R-R-Y-S.com, and don't forget the promo code L-O-C at checkout to save $5 off. See you around the forum.
I just wanted to read a little bit of Dio when he talks about the marriage betrothal between Fulvia, Mark Antony's son, and Caesar's infant daughter, Julia. Dio writes, this was all mutual pretense. They had no intention of carrying out any of these unions, but were acting apart in view of the needs of the existing situation. Furthermore, Antony sent Octavia herself at once from Corica, I'm not sure where that's called, to Italy, that she might not share his danger while he was warring against the Parthians. Besides, the above negotiations, at the time, they removed Sextus from his priesthood as well as from the consulship to which he had been appointed and granted themselves chief authority for another 5 years since the first period had elapsed. So they officially kick him out. He's been removed from all the honors that he had. But even Dio can tell at this point, look, they don't mean it. This is just something to get through now and today. Let them get their individual houses in order, and then they can go at each other, because that just seems to be the nature of these gentlemen.
Yeah. I like the fact that Antony sends Octavia, his wife, back home. She's not going on campaign with him. And she's like,
no.
Why not? He goes, oh, well, I don't want you to be a risk. She goes, you're not...
You're not going to swing by Egypt.
You're not going to Egypt, are you? Because what?
No.
What? No. Egypt. Well,
mind.
Look, I may. look, I don't know what's going to happen. Don't ask me what's going to happen. I can't predict the future.
That's right. Do I look like Fortuna? No. I don't know what's going to go. Am I getting a little excited in the pants? Yes, but nothing to do with. Don't worry about it.
Now, I hadn't finished on Agrippa, but just talking about him and Atticus, that's all right. You just interrupted me whenever you fucking feel like it.
Dio.
Agrippa and Atticus got along for the rest of their lives. They were very close. And he and Cecilia Atticus seem to have had a very contented marriage. They tried to have children straight away. And indeed, at some point between 37 and 33 BCE, a daughter was born and given the name Vipsania Agrippina.
No, yes. And she might come back into the story.
She might come back into the story. Indeed. Indeed. The daughter of Agrippa. And Atticus. You know, I don't know what Cicero would have thought about his best friend marrying off his daughter to Octavian's right-hand man. But anyway, he's not around to worry about it.
Well, and he doesn't have a right hand. But either way. So,
to write about it.
That's right. We don't have to worry about that.
Doesn't have any hands to write about it.
Right. Can I read another? I think this is from Appian. I don't want to jump ahead, so just stop me. But there's a part where Antony and Octavian are going to come together and they're going to meet for the first time since the first screwed up meeting at the river. Did you run across that?
Yes.
Okay. So I don't know if I'm jumping ahead. I just wanted to make sure that one of us had that information.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So Octavian plans a new war against Sexy P for 37 BCE. But this time, he's going to do it right.
Good for what?
If at first you don't succeed. He had a motto, Octavian. Yeah, you were going to finish my thought for me. Keep going. Yes. What was it?
If at first you don't succeed, put Agrippa in charge.
That's it. I saw a t-shirt on Amazon or eBay yesterday, WWAD, what would Agrippa do? Yeah, I think we should put our own version of that out there.
Yes.
Yeah, if at first you don't succeed, just let Agrippa do it. Like, seriously, like, fucking, what are you thinking? What were you thinking?
Off you go, Agrippa.
Menodorus, Minas, the freed slave, at this point defects back to Sexy P.
Damn.
He complains that he isn't given any command under Octavian. He's just running second fiddle to Sabinus. So he's like, well, I know you gave me gold rings and shit, but I thought I was going to be the man. I'm not the man. I want to be the man. So he defects back. And he may have also been scared off by Mark Antony saying, actually, you are my slave. And because I bought your dad's property, you're my property, you've defected, I'm going to have you killed. So he's like, oh, shit. Get the fuck out of Dodge. Anyway, Agrippa is put in charge of the fleet and preparing for it, which is a good decision. Oh, he's going to build a new one. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess my other thing is, though, the slave, I can't remember his name, it's already gone already. But, I mean, he's not thinking this through because he's already left Sextus once and now he's going back. What exactly kind of treatment does he think he's going to get? Is he going to get an ovation? Is he going to get, you know, a parade or whatever? I mean, he's already betrayed this guy who can't seem to trust anybody. So it can't go well for him.
Yeah. I'm sure he's negotiated a deal with him. Look, I'm sorry. Yeah. I fucked up. What do you want me to say?
I didn't mean it.
He offered me gold rings. You were being a prick, you know.
Yeah.
Let's put the past behind us.
Sextus Pricus. Yeah, yeah.
Now, Agrippa, as we mentioned earlier, had been in Gaul suppressing a rebellion in Aquitania. At some point, he hears that there's trouble along the Rhine River, so he builds a bridge, crosses the Rhine, again, probably learning how to do it from Caesar's Gallic commentaries.
Literally, copied it, page
Dio word word. Notes that Agrippa was the second of the Romans to cross the Rhine for war.
He pulled a Caesar.
Pulled a Caesar.
Right.
But his expedition is cut short when he gets instructions from Octavian to come home.
Save my ass.
And save my ass indeed. Finish work on the fleet. And as I mentioned earlier, I think in one of the previous episodes, he's awarded a triumph for his victory in Gaul, but chooses not to celebrate it because of Octavian's recent defeat against Sexy P, and he thought, it's just going to make the boss look bad. I don't want to make him look bad. So he turns down the triumph. Oh, somebody else turned down a triumph once. Who was that?
Caesar.
Yes.
The first man who crossed the Rhine.
Mm-hmm. And why did Julius Caesar turn down his triumph?
He would have had to have entered the city and give up being a candidate for upcoming election. And nobody thought he would do it because they never would have done it. But he was looking at the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Which election was that? I can't remember. Was that a consulship?
Yeah, I think so. That was his first consulship.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And what does Agrippa get awarded at this moment in time? Consulship. Agrippa becomes consul in 37. Nice. So he turns down the triumph in order to become consul, as Julius Caesar did in fucking, what was that, 59?
I think so.
This is 37, so 47, 22 years earlier.
Yeah.
He does what Caesar did. But also because he is deliberately doesn't want to make Octavian look bad.
Right. Tell me if you've – I can't remember when you did this earlier. If I'm going to read it, just a short part that supposedly Agrippa said about this kind of stuff. He said, his advice, therefore, was that the man who intended to survive must relieve his masters of the annoyance incident to such undertakings and still reserve for them the successful completion of the work. So do what you got to do. Try to ease their life. But when it comes to the actual ending of it, let them do it. You're going to live a long time. And after all, that's what you want, right? So it's just good advice. And he seemed to genuinely live by that kind of idea.
Yeah. I don't need glory. I'm just happy to, I just want to get shit done. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm
a shit doer. I'm a shit doer.
I'll get shit done. Yeah. Yeah. So he's consul at the age of 27.
Not bad.
Remember, you used to have to be 40 or 41, depending on whether you were a patrician or a senator or I think a plebeian.
A plebe, yep.
To become a consul. Maybe 40 or 43?
Something like that.
Something like that. He's 27. Yeah. But, you know, as we've mentioned, the dude was solid. As a general, an engineer, an administrator, he was competent. He was also loyal to a fault. And now he's about, modest.
Yeah, exactly. And now he's about to take all that considerable talent and take it to the one area that Romans really do not like to go, the ocean.
I think of you as my Agrippa, Ray.
Aw.
Competent, loyal, and modest.
That's me. That's me.
I am Octavian, a coward, and I just take all the glory. Works for me.
Well, as long as we understand each other, I think.
And 2,000 years from now, no one will remember you.
That's right. That's fine.
They will have heard my name, but they won't remember anything about what I did. They'll be like, "Oh yeah, wasn't he a podcaster or something?" I don't know.
Something.
Yeah. So he gets to work to build the fleet and like just, you know, he's a fucking crazy man with this. Like,
right.
He has this brilliant idea. Now down in the Bay of Naples, there's a place called Cumae. Behind Cumae, there are two lakes, Lake Avernus and a smaller lake. He excavates a canal connecting the open sea, the Bay of Naples, to Lake Avernus and then to the smaller lake. And this is where he can train his crews in safety. So Sexy P can't just, you know, sail on up and destroy them.
Right. And storms can't. Why? Yeah, so this is smart. So they got the quiet. They're away from everything. They can practice training. They can practice their maneuvers, organization, communication with flags or whatever. Brilliant idea. Why would this wasn't done a year or so ago? Because he wasn't in charge.
Yeah, and to me, this is, you know, Caesar or Alexander level of thinking.
Exactly. And preparation. Exactly.
He's you know, coming up with solutions to problems. He's inventing stuff, as we'll see as we move forwards. Just a whole different level of genius and thinking this guy had. Now, this was an incredible feat, building this canal and setting up these training yards, shipbuilding yards, both in terms of engineering and training. He uses concrete extensively to build this stuff and get it built fast and to get it built securely. Now, some people think, I think, that Agrippa invented concrete. He didn't. The Romans had been using concrete for centuries before Agrippa. But he used it, you know, extensively in rebuilding Rome over the next few decades. Nice. He loved concrete. He worked with it well. And, you know, there's something special, as you may have seen, I think Jan, one of our listeners, posted an article about Roman concrete. Did you see that?
No, I missed that. I have to go look for that.
Jan posted up on Facebook a week or so ago. There's been some recent studies done on Roman concrete and tried to figure out why it still stands today.
Lot
of it. You know, you think about the Pantheon, you think about the Colosseum, places like that still stand today. They're thousands of years old. How is that possible? Some researchers recently made Roman concrete with the old Roman recipe, which I think they get from Vitruvius's writings. And it used volcanic ash, among other things. And they found that when they made this concrete and let it set over, I think, 6 months, a certain kind of crystals called stratlingite crystals formed volcanic sand binds with limestone. And so it created these like really hard volcanic crystals through the concrete, which prevented the spread of cracks by reinforcing interfacial zones, which are weak links inside of the concrete. So
cool.
Their concrete, you know, could withstand the test of time much greater than modern recipes for concrete. Let's face it, we don't build shit to last now.
No.
Because we're like, yeah, we're probably going to change our mind in
50
years.
Anyway.
We want to tear it down. So what's the point? Romans, on the other hand, were like, we're going to be around forever.
True.
Let's build this shit, man.
It's going to be here. Yeah. And the engineer in Agrippa appreciated what he had to work with. And yeah, I mean, that's just amazing because, you know, when I went to Rome, I went to all those places. And yeah, that stuff is it's still around. You can still use it. That is absolutely amazing.
Now, this whole installation that he built was called Portus Aulius, Port of Julius. Honor of Octavian. And it was so amazing an achievement, apparently, that both Virgil and Pliny the Elder called the harbor one of the man-made wonders of Italy.
Wow.
So this was some amazing structure, and it lasted until the 16th century when it was destroyed by an earthquake.
Damn. So who knows how long it would still be around if not for the earthquake. You never know.
Even it lasted 1,600 years.
That's pretty impressive.
And he built it overnight in order to train a fleet.
That's staggering.
Now, by the way, where he built this, Cumae, is most famous as the seat of the Cumaean Sibyl, the most famous oracle of Apollo amongst the Romans. I know we've talked about Apollo a lot on the Alexander Show, and if you haven't heard that, that's your fault. Go listen to it. But her sanctuary is still there, now open to the Republic, open to the public.
We should go.
Republic, I guess. We will go, definitely. We'll go there. In Roman mythology, there's an entrance to the underworld located at Lake Avernus, a crater lake. It was the route Aeneas used to descend to the underworld. Now, I think we've talked about the Sibylline books before. I can't remember which show it was. But basically, the Sibylline books of prophecy, there's this great story how they were acquired by Tarquinius Superbus, the last king of Rome. Apparently, not long before he got his ass kicked out of Rome, an old woman who was not a native of the country, according to the legend, arrived incognita in Rome. She offered 9 books of prophecies to King Tarquin. And the king was like, nah, I don't think so. So, because she was asking some exorbitant price. So she goes outside, burns 3 of them, and offers the remaining six back to him at the same price.
Right.
And he still refused.
Nah.
So she goes outside, burns three more of them.
Oh, God.
And offers him the last three at the same price. Tarquin relents, purchases the last three at the full original price, and the old woman disappeared from amongst men.
Wow. Just tell me birds didn't come along and snatch up a carrier away.
Best.
That's all.
Negotiator in history. Don't worry about Donald Trump's art of the deal, people. This woman knew the art of the deal. You don't want to buy it? Fine. I'll burn it down. You want to buy what's left? No? I'll burn that down too.
And it worked.
Yeah.
And it worked. And I can just imagine the first six books were just blank pages. It doesn't matter. It still worked.
Yeah, imagine what was in them. The books were thereafter kept in the Temple of Jupiter on the Capitoline Hill in Rome to be consulted only in the case of emergencies.
Mm-hmm. Which has been the last 20 years, but go ahead.
Yeah, and they were consulted just recently. When the temple burned down in the 80s BCE, I think, what was going on in the 80s?
When Sulla was involved.
Marius, yeah.
Yeah, there's some shit going down.
The books were burnt with it.
Oh.
But there were copies of them in different places around the empire. So they had to go and collect those copies and have them, rewritten.
Right.
These were carefully stored in the rebuilt temple.
Mm-hmm.
The Emperor Augustus later had them moved to the Temple of Apollo on the Palatine Hill, where they remained until 405 CE when General Flavius Stilicho, who was a Christian, regarded the books as pagan and had them destroyed along with all the other copies.
Thanks,
Christianity.
Why couldn't they be seen as just historical documents at that point and not a threat? Never mind. I'll just shut the fuck up right now.
Thanks, Christians. All the great things you've done for the world.
What have Christians done for us? They burnt our books.
Well, that's about it as a show. I mean, we've got back to... So we've got, just to recap, Agrippa building a massive new fleet. With
bigger and better than before.
Training new rowers. We'll get into that in the next episode.
Really training.
Shit is about to get real on the seas.
Yes.
That is the end of episode 23.
Instead of the Midas touch, it's about to get the Agrippa touch.
What have we learned in this episode? What would Agrippa do if at first you don't succeed? Just put a gripper on the job. Yeah. And I've got another review I'm going to read.
Okay.
Brilliant by Monius. Monius. A stonkingly brilliant podcast. I just had to, read this one out because he said stonkingly, he or she.
Nice.
A stonkingly brilliant podcast that shows what is possible in the podcasting world. I love the banter and repartee between Ray and Cameron. I completely agree with Cameron's stance on many things, so keep it coming, O'Reilly. It's just Riley, but okay.
Just Riley.
You have the double act balance just right between moving on the narrative history structure as well as the tangents that deepen the analysis. The humor helps the material to be accessible to a modern audience. I have laughed many times and my coffee and other beverages come out of my nose on several occasions.
That's the highest compliment.
Luckily, nobody was watching. Fantastic content, brilliantly executed. That's what we aim for. Beverages out of the nose.
That's when you know you've done it right.
Snort laugh. Thank you, Monius. Send us an email, ave@thelifeofcaesar.com. ave@lifeofcaesar.com.
Right.
And give us your address. We will send you a gift.
Yes.
Even maybe Ray this time because you didn't insult Ray outwardly. overtly. And Ray and I'll be back in the not too distant future with episode 24.
Wow. Take care, everyone.